You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is JC Sherbert with Coffee. Hope you're all doing well this terrible Tuesday on the Chief Sports Network, as we like to call it. Rafael Esparza is going to be in on the morning show. He's usually in on Fridays, but in today to get you ready for March Madness, the bracket. He's going to tell you how to fill out your bracket and win some money. Talk about the point spreads, as always, live from Las Vegas, sometimes New Orleans, but we love Rafael. He's a Big Ten homer. We know that, but it takes all types of opinions, and he's absolutely money when it comes to, of course, for entertainment purposes only in the state of South Carolina, playing the point spread. So we've got that coming up later today. We've also got Preston Thorne, who will be in. And he'll have a lot to say. Wanted to give a shout out to all the former Lou Holtz era players, Ryan Brewer, Travell Wharton, and many of them were in South Bend for the memorial yesterday. Saw that on social media. Also, John Strickland and some of the guys that couldn't quite make it up to South Bend held a memorial service in the Long Football Operations Building. Shout out to Shane Beamer for allowing them to do that. Great to honor Coach Holtz, and, you know, since his passing, I think we've all sort of reflected back on that era. And it was a good era. You know, it was the program was in football was sort of in the dumps. There was no 9-4 and then a dip like now. It was 1-21. And before that it was 5-6 and a 6-5 that didn't make a bowl. And a 4-6-1 with a record-setting offense, and it was the SEC, and it was just bad. You know, South Carolina was behind. There were more excuses in those days, like valid reasons. You know, there's a difference between reasons and excuses. There's not a lot of those reasons anymore to not at least be competitive in football, but we'll see what happens. And, you know, some good things coming out of the press conferences yesterday and from spring practice as everybody kind of reconvenes. After spring break, pro timing day is today out at the stadium. I'm sorry, out of the complex, if you will. I guess there's not a name for the Rice Building, the Spurrier Indoor, and the practice fields. It's called the complex, Gamecock Football Complex. I think that's what Coach Fink and those guys call it. So that's good. Wish everybody the best. Clayton White yesterday, Carolina's defensive coordinator, says he hopes Brandon Cisse runs sub 4-4. And I do too. You know, I think Brandon Cisse played really well this past year. He's a pro, versatile player. And, you know, just keep that defensive backs train to the NFL going from South Carolina because it helps them recruit. And also, it's good for your program to have as many NFL players as possible. And there's a lot of them, significantly more than there used to be from the University of South Carolina. Gamecock baseball took up most of the shows yesterday. My gosh, we went 40 minutes on the crosstalk, so we didn't have much of a show with Phil and I, but that's okay. That happens sometimes this time of year. 4 o'clock first pitch. Charlotte's coming to town. They're a really good mid-major program. They're 13-6 coming in. Definitely going to be looking to beat the Gamecocks. Robert Woodard, Ashley Chastain Woodard's husband, is the head coach of the 49ers, and yeah, gosh, if you're just looking for hope, and here's a little hope. Okay, I'm gonna give you folks a little hope for baseball. Okay, and then I'm gonna shut up about it. Because you know where I stand and where others stand, and it's rare to take that kind of stance this early in a season with a second year coach, but it is what it is, right? Overall, that's my take. But if you're looking for a turnaround, and you're hopeful, if you can get past Charlotte tonight, which is easier said than done, Arkansas hadn't scored a bunch of runs either. Now, here's the difference. Arkansas took 2 of 3 from a really good Mississippi State team. They kind of know how to win, right? Despite the fact that and they've been kind of a pitching team for a long time, or last few years at least. But if somehow you can get out of the doldrums at the plate, you can pitch well yourself. If you're low scoring teams, it's 2 to 1, something like that. I don't know. Just giving those of you that won't hope, there's some hope for a turnaround and a different conversation next week. But I'm just not confident. I mean, we've seen 78 games. 78 games. So that's that with baseball. But that's a 4 p.m. first pitch. Wondering, I know the weather's not so great in Columbia. It's cold, and I'm not sure. That's why they moved the game back. So I'm not sure how many people will actually be there. Like I said, it appears the diehards have abandoned ship, and that's an alarm. That's an alarm. We got a lot of new people around the University of South Carolina in charge of things. I don't know if anyone's aware of that with the baseball program, but it's an alarm. It's unprecedented, even when it's cold. So we will see sort of what happens. All right, on to football. Kendall Briles, South Carolina's new offensive coordinator. I have said, and many others have said, that this or an offense like this was probably the direction that in an ideal world Shane Beamer would go. There were some other types of offenses out there. You had Chip Kelly, who interviewed for the job. I don't think he was second. But he did interview for the job at South Carolina a few years ago. Obviously, say Chip Kelly's like, why did you just hire Chip Kelly, right? Yeah, but Chip Kelly's kind of gone to that NFL thing, and at Ohio State, we didn't really see the old school Chip Kelly offense really till the playoffs last year. And UCLA was kind of a lot of pro stuff. I don't know if I don't know if he's been NFLized or not, but honestly, he's that's we'll see what happens with him, right? But also, the guy from Old Dominion that ended up elsewhere, John David Baker, who's at Ole Miss now, kind of all from this. Jason Beck, who is now at Michigan, you follow Kyle Whittingham from Utah. That's a different guy. So you can do it all kinds of ways in college, as long as it is college. I mean, there's nothing wrong. There's a lot of motion that offensive coordinators use these days in different formations and personnel settings. Todd Monken used it at Georgia and worked well. Buster Faulkner uses it at Georgia Tech. He's considered one of the best ones. Beck was kind of a guy like that. So there's nothing wrong with like actually doing, things that are similar to what they do in the NFL. But I think the problem at Carolina is how it was being implemented and how it was, especially how it was called in games most of the time under the first two offensive coordinators here at South Carolina. Because it's kind of funny that the minute, for 5 years, the minute things are kind of stripped down and stripped away. I'm sorry, first three offensive coordinators. I did not mean to leave out Dowell Loggins. shoot. Loggins, Shula kind of, blended, although Loggins was superior to Shula. I will say this. One thing about Dowell compared to the other two is he did try to strip it down and stuff. So to his credit. But we can get into all the history of the offensive coordinators later, right? But I think a lot of the problem has been how it's been implemented. With Loggins specifically, you had 1 year where your quarterback certainly wasn't lost in Spencer Rattler because, and he only had 1 year to learn the system, so it wasn't that hard to learn. And players told us that at a multiple times about Loggins. Then no offensive line. Then the next year, Lenoris early on, at least, he's still kind of learning how to quarterback. And then once he did, everything was fine. And then I think going from Algebra 2 to calculus the next year, in many ways, sort of hamstrung it. And, I was not, I guess not buying that he was told not to run by Shula. I'm still not. I don't think he told him that. But I think some players, Lenore Sellers, just like everybody else, they kind of do what they think their coach wants them to do. And I think maybe there was just an overemphasis on staying in the pocket at all cost, because that was the next step. If you look at Lenore Sellers, and you heard about it after the Clemson game, and I wish that had never gotten public. Not that I'm being critical of Beamer, Dowell, or anybody, or Shuler, anybody from saying it. Say what you want. But I wish that would have never gotten public, because that seemed to be like, and it was truly a next step he could take, stay in the pocket. But I think he overcorrected. And I think the whole offense was set up on him overcorrecting. And when you can't block, it's unrealistic to do that. Very unrealistic. And so now they're moving to a different system. And refreshingly enough, yesterday, people ask questions, rightfully so, carry over and stuff like that. Very good questions in the press conference yesterday, folks. There's not a lot of it, because it's a different type of philosophy. I think there's some plays, because every playbook has some of the similar plays. If you look at the Baylor offense and he says passing game's NFL. What he means by that is route trees, plays, things like that. It's a pro kind of passing system. And what that basically means is, they run some of the same routes and plays, things like that. I don't, there's not a ton of progression and all that good stuff. But Kendall Bryles is very clear. They're putting in their system. There may be some conceptual carryover, but he's not taking anything from the last playbook and keeping it or whatever. Now, sometimes, and you call it different things and stuff, but Sellers, if you learn how to run this thing where these three routes happen, that's the same thing. And so it is helpful in that regard, but Browse is putting in his own system, and rightfully so. I don't think anything about last year's offensive scheme, as far as how Shula did it and worked. There's probably things in there. This is a vast playbook. There are probably things in there that, Browse runs, but I don't. Everything from run game to blocking scheme, that's all changing, and good. But that's all I got to say. Good. I could care less what's carried over from last year. They got a lot of new players anyway. They have to learn it. So everybody's got to learn it anyway. And from what I've been told, it's been refreshing. It's been refreshing. I heard the same thing about Loggins after Satterfield. And say what you want about the issues that the offense had in 2023 and part of 2024. That learning it and going out and looking confused, or like a dumpster fire on the field, or like a car full of circus clowns that, there's clown cars with like 19 people in it, and they get up and run around, or a fire drill or a tire change. By the way, just as an aside, Marshall McFadden, he's from South Carolina, played at South Carolina State, was in the NFL a while. He's on a pit crew for, I think, NASCAR. Dude, I know the skill set for football translates there. It's the most amazing thing. Go look it up on social media, South Carolinian. I was like, wow, that's awesome. That guy, he's just, he's in a stance. He's, I mean, dude, that's awesome. But that chaos, when you don't know what you're doing on offense, or you're confused, or it's too complicated at the college level, it looks like that. And then, whoop, yellow flag or sack or a number of bad things happen. I don't think South Carolina's going to have that. They may not be good on offense. I can't guarantee that. It's the SEC. The Kendall Bryles type scheme and stuff, a lot of teams run it, and they don't always score, in the 40s. But I can tell you that this eliminates a lot of the clutter, which is fine, because they do the same thing on defense. They do the same thing on special teams. I think eliminating the clutter is paramount when it comes to this coming season. You go play free, and away you go. So I think that's one thing to kind of hang your hat on. Another thing to kind of hang your hat on with Kendall Briles and this offense is the fact that he looks for tough dudes on the offensive line. Not saying that everybody doesn't, because that should be fundamental. But he was asked, you know, what's his idea of offense? Give me the five baddest dudes out there. And look, man, he's right. You know, you need to be, and South Carolina's recruited in theory, because again, you know, you got a lot of guys coming up a level. And anytime you go up a level in football, even if it's a smaller level, there is an adjustment that has to be made. Now, I'm of the belief, as you know, that it's a slight adjustment. And just because a guy comes from a lower level doesn't mean he's in some way not as good. A lot of those guys go up and thrive, right? Offensive line is one of those. You know, Vanderbilt had one of the better offensive lines in the SEC last year. I had a kid from North Dakota, South Dakota, one of those Dakotas, not the state, the Dakotas. I think it's South Dakota. Two kids from Liberty and a couple of Power Four transfers. You know, that's kind of how they pieced it together. You know, you've got the Torricelli Simpkins example. Kamar Bell came from Florida Atlantic. You know, but you do have a lot of guys coming up a level, and sometimes guys with the collisions and as it affects them as being bad dudes, sometimes that doesn't necessarily, they don't want any, right? They don't want any. So that ends up being what sort of happens there. But I do think that the emphasis on toughness is important. And I think in this offense, it looks finesse. But when you look at Baylor, you go back and look at Baylor, and you go back and look at FAU, look at the schemes within the SEC that run this stuff. I mean, Lane Kiffin's offense is a hybrid of what Kiffin's always done and what he and Briles kind of came up with at FAU. It's a lot different than what they ran at Alabama. You know, Josh Heupel, same way. He got some stuff from Jeff Lebby. That's different than what he did at Missouri. And a lot of that is in the run game, where it is a, you know, they'll run the ball on you, and you have to. I mean, heck, everybody will tell you that. Steve Spurrier will tell you that. You got to run the ball. And so there's a lot of physicality that needs to take place on the offensive line at a minimum. But I think too that, you know, that's good. And he was asked about the Randy Clemens crap that got on viral video. And I think that most of the folks out there that know offensive line think it's absolute crap. And I was listening to David Pollack the other day talk about how, you know, and he's a defensive lineman. Obviously, we know who David Pollack is around here. About how, wow, he was talking about Seton, the kid from Colorado that wanted $3 million. And he's like, well, this guy, I don't ever see him do anything physical. I mean, he's a pass blocker, kind of gets in the way, kind of defends like a basketball player out there. He's like, I'm not really seeing this guy put anybody in the dirt. It's hard to put people in the dirt, but I have a theory on this, and it kind of, you've heard me speak about it before. When you look at all the confusion and mess, and then you hear, well, Lonnie Teasley, you know, put in this scheme because he learned it from the Ravens, and that sounds cool, but pro offensive linemen, all the stuff we just talked about toughness and grit, that's already there, or they don't have a job. The athleticism, it's already there, they don't have a job. You can do that there. Plus, you have it's a different size. You know, the hash marks are different. It's just different. When you ask college kids to do that maybe aren't all that stuff is, it's they're developing. Yet another reason why I think it's absolutely asinine for people to talk about how, oh, it's they're pros now. They may be pros in the sense that they get paid for a service, but are they're not pro players. They're not good enough to be pro players. They're developing. Isn't that what college is supposed to be for? Developing. You know, but I would have loved to have people just pay me to go to school, you know, to learn, pay me to learn. You can do it now. Somebody, you know, you want to pay me $1 million to go back to Carolina, learn something, I'll do it. JC, you probably need to learn how to be a better podcaster. Okay, yeah, that's good. I'll pay you $10. Fair enough, right? But you know, you gotta. So if you pile all that on top of them, and they're still trying to develop, even if they are tough, it's going to look like they're not. And I see it. You know, my stepson's team last year, in the high school level. I'm like, they're asking you to do what? So what happened to just firing off the ball and kicking people's butt? You know, trying to just old school. And in football, I was reading the other day because there were some people talking about how total offense numbers were down around college football. Part of it's because they decided to just shorten the game and take 7 or 8 plays out. Part of it is what was said is that, you know, defenses kind of caught up to some things. But I think on the offensive line, the reason people are panicking and talking about epidemics and, you know, crying because blue bloods aren't 8 deep on the offensive line anymore because of the portal and all this stuff. I think my theory, and this is an opinion, and some football people may shoot me down. And this is general. You know, I'm not getting online looking at drills and going, ah, this is why they're not good. I do think that some overthinking has crept into the position based on my lived experience. I hate it when people say that. And this is an opinion. Okay. This is not, trust me. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying my lived experience is facts because well, there's a school of thoughts out there that that's the case. But I'm saying that in my observation, that offensive line has become overly complicated at the amateur level, pre-pro. I don't know why that is. I think part of it is coaches get ideas and it creeps in and they're like, okay, we could do this. I think part of it is that offensive line has become much tougher to play because the athletes on the other side are ridiculous. And it's just hard. It's a thankless job. Most fan bases hate the offensive line and expect perfection. So every time you give up a sack, that will happen. You absolutely suck. Otherwise, they don't mention you. It's a thankless job, and our society is not. It's not a lot of people lining up for thankless jobs these days, and so even if you're close to being a great athlete and you're that big on the football field, you prefer defensive line. That's what makes guys like Darius Gray special. Darius Gray could easily be a D tackle in college, easy. So could Shedd Surratt, for that matter. But I think my theory is, and everybody got all over Randy Clements because it was an old, antiquated, old school drill. I think the more old school you coach these guys and the more of an old school mindset they get, the scheme will allow them to play that way. Again, it's a high school scheme that was developed in the 1990s. How tough could it be? You know, they've taught this for years. And had good offensive lines at Baylor. So that's exciting. It was exciting to hear him say that. And I can't say I'm not questioning how tough South Carolina's offensive linemen individual tough they've been the last couple of years. I mean, Torricelli Simpkins, he'd tear your head off. Plenty physical. The NFL knows. The NFL guys know that. But what they also said at the Saints was, hey, he's got to develop. The development wasn't quite there yet. Well, you've got proven developers, and you've got a scheme that will allow them to bite off little bits at a time, which will allow if you individually can learn quickly, because it's not a lot. Then you know your assignment, and that allows you to gel because you can rep over and over and over again. It becomes second nature. Again, will the offensive line be amazing next year? No, but I'll take my chances with this idea as opposed to let's go get something from the Ravens when Mark Trestman, I never thought was a great offensive coordinator. The NFL folks do, so maybe I'm wrong, but he was a failure in college at NC State. I know that. I wonder why. That he developed back in the day. I just don't, you know, let's go with this. Let's go with old school Randy Clements and Jason Smith, who was a first round draft pick. And Kendall also said yesterday in the press conference, he's pleased with where they're at, that they'll find their five and away they go. And again, just so everybody knows, with Josiah Thompson, they knew that he wasn't going to be there. They never were planning on him being there. So if you're judging the recruiting and the portal part of it, then, you know, you can't say, well, they, you know, they lost Josiah Thompson because they knew that. So whatever the opinion is about these guys they brought in from the portal at the end, remember, they didn't lose. They recruited all these guys knowing he wouldn't be there. So that's both good and bad, because it means you can't use that as an excuse for poor offensive line play. But at the same time, you know, you got to feel hopeful because, hey, they've fixed that. You know, Jacarius Peake's different, obviously, but Jacarius Peake can come back. Jacarius. And Kendall Browse was asked about that, and he was like, I don't care. I like that mindset. That go play mindset always works in college. That kind of, okay, that's part of it. Let's just go. You know, so I thought that was a positive opinion about it. Wide receiver, and, you know, he didn't really get into much in the press conference, but I'm going to say this. I've heard some pretty good things so far about this group, but we always do in practice. I think the big key for that room is, you know, take advantage of what's been given you. I mean, unlike last year, you know, it wasn't exactly a wide receiver friendly system. Take advantage of it this year, because the ball is going to be in your hands a whole lot. And that means you can run up, you can make up for the lack of numbers, and you can go make plays. You know, I think a lot is on it. You know, another thing Browse said yesterday about, you know, he was asked about Josh Hoover, who's now the quarterback at Indiana. I'll say this: Hoover and Lenora Sellers are completely different types of quarterbacks. Josh Hoover had, you know, he's a passer, 10,000 passing yards so far at TCU. He's going to go to Indiana. There's some people talking to me. I think it's because of the underestimating Mendoza. Now they're kind of overestimating Hoover, in my opinion. But I'm going to shut up about Indiana, though, because yeah, I'm never underestimating those guys again. But Hoover's different. Hoover's not really the ideal fit for the Browse offense, not the Sonny Dykes offense at TCU, what they do. What they like to do, that's more of a pass-happy attack. The ideal fit for Bryles is a guy that can run and throw, which is Lenore Sellers. And he basically said that yesterday in his answer. He said, well, you know, Lenore's is a little bit different. We can run him, and he's got his legs. And Kendall Bryles and Lenore's both have said this spring, they're going to run more. There's not going to be this question about when to run and not to run, because the running's just going to be part of it. And you can see that throughout Browse history. And I think that's kind of an exciting thing, because when you add that to the mix and it's just part of your offense, you know, what teams did last year in the passing game, and there were designed runs called. Don't get me wrong. Beamer's right about that, and so is Shula. But I think the designed runs a lot of times were like, okay, you just run here. And then what teams did was with regards to passing, because, you know, what Lenoris was really good at was off schedule plays. They completely took that away because they just spy him in the passing game. There was no idea. There was no plan to run, you know, there, and it just bottled him up. And then, hey, you cover the receivers for a little bit. The line can't block, so you're going to get home quicker. Just get him on the ground. It's that simple. And it worked. Most of the time. Sometimes Lenoris would still escape and get out of it. This thing this year with the RPO game, it's going to be a lot different, because there'll be run pass options with a tag for him to run. So, you know, if you're planning on him running, you can scheme it one way. And if he's just, it's like defenses need to be put in what's called conflict. Okay. In other words, so if you guess, if a defensive coordinator is knowing run here, pass here, it's so much easier to dial it up. It's when you don't know if it's going to run or pass. Well, this is why the run pass options work, right? And some defenses have called up to certain ones, but the good thing about that, you can evolve them. And this is why it's so important for Sellers, I think, to get this down, because there's a play called. And, well, You know, unlike last year where you kind of knew what was going to happen and it's up to the quarterback to kind of check into something else. The play snapped, or you do pre-snap, post-snap, and one of three things could happen. You know, that makes it a little bit more difficult to defend, doesn't it? So if you want to spy Lenoris on double spy him, great. He's going to hand it off, or maybe throw it into the flat, or maybe, you know, or maybe, oh, God forbid, throw a slant, something like that. But that's kind of what this offense is, you know, and it's designed that way for a reason. Browse was talking about it yesterday, adapting to the personnel, adapting to the strengths you have. He says that over and over again. You know, you're going to hear a lot of questions that he'll answer that. Whereas, you know, maybe you won't think that, you know, but this is out of that box that we're accustomed to around here. And so we'll see what happens. You know, I think that it was refreshing to hear some of that stuff backed up. You know, they're not back on the field until Wednesday, but the Kendall Briles hire, I believe, you know, just on paper, is significant in the sense that it kind of brings South Carolina football, you know, as far as getting ready to go compete. There's nothing that you go, hey, look, I don't know about what we're doing here. You know, will this work? I think it will work as long as it's executed properly, which technically is the case for any offense, JC. You're not really saying anything profound here. I yes and no. I think this is, you know, more something that works in college, which is what I've been kind of hoping for a while now. And so starting off Kent State, you're more prepared, in my opinion, to go to battle with something like this. And if you look around the SEC, let's just go with last season, guys. I mean, I mentioned who had improved because of scheme. Oklahoma took their defense. They still weren't great. And a good question, Browse was asked how many points they could expect per game. He said, I can't tell you that, but he said, if we average 12 and we win, that's fine with me. However many to win football games. And that's what Oklahoma did last year. See, Oklahoma the year before didn't have a chance to score enough to win football games. They did. I mean, everybody was talking Metier for Heisman and stuff after putting up 24 against, you know, Oklahoma was never this powerhouse. I mean, Texas held them to six. Part of that was Metier getting hurt. Part of it was their offensive line still wasn't there. Arbuckle's system is a little different, a lot different than Briles. But hey, guess what? They went from 6-7 to 10-3 and made the playoff and got to have a playoff game at home because they got enough, right? You know, they still play defense. They still do special teams. They still don't score a ton, but they got enough. So that was very intelligent, what Briles said, and that's the expectation. I don't know that the expectation is 500 yards a game and 40 points. I don't know if that's realistic in the SEC, but the expectation is get enough points to win because South Carolina's offense fundamentally last year was not able to do that. Be it scheme, blocking, whatever, it just wasn't. So that's where the offense has to go. If you're looking for a destination on the journey of football between now and Kent State, enough to win games. And even in a 4-8 year last year, that was the enough points to win the games. I'm just kind of throwing out Captain Obvious knowledge today, right? But I think that's the key. You look at Vanderbilt, how Vanderbilt went from a program I was sort of worried about, you know, in the new era. I was like, I don't know, they're losing all their guys to the portal, whatever. Vanderbilt historically has messed up offensive scheme. I mean, the worst decision was when Derek Mason took over and decided they were going to be Stanford and run Stanford's pro eye power thing, which in the Pac-12 at the time, that's smart because you're zigging when everybody else is zagging. You can go recruit offensive linemen nationally. You can get a Toby Gerhart or a Christian McCaffrey out there to run the football. It's old school when everybody else in the Pac-12 is a little soft and new school. You're going to do that in the SEC in 2015 during a time where Alabama, everybody's got a great defense. That's a disaster. James Franklin won 9 games there because he had a nice little spread and, you know, kind of does James things like James Franklin's always preferred to do. And they won 9, then they didn't win an SEC game the next year because they were ramming their heads against the wall. And then, you know, have pro style guys. But what he did with this is say, all right, we're going to get not only just go with a college type offense here, we're going to go with an equalizer, you know, and that's Jerry Kill and Beck and the Kill Zone and Pavia and all that. We'll see if Jerry Curtis can run that. Because that was the difference. Vanderbilt's offense was ridiculously hard to stop because it was executed so well. And then you just, it's got some option, but it's not really the option. I mean, it's crazy. But guess what? They won 10 games at Vanderbilt doing that. All right, who didn't do well? Billy Napier's Stone Age offense at Florida with Florida talent. You know, you want to talk about scheme, go call up some Florida fans. That's a necessary thing at that school. We'll see how Buster Faulkner does down there. That's going to be interesting because that style is different than what's worked there in the past. But I'm not saying it won't. Buster Faulkner's a heck of an OC. But you know what else didn't work? For whatever reason, Hugh Freeze and his three play callers at Auburn. 3 points against Kentucky. You know what didn't work? Kentucky, Bush Hamden, and the, you know, copy of a copy of a copy of Boise State's offense, power run, all that. That didn't work. Those teams were not good. South Carolina with Mike Shula did not work. In the SEC this past year. You know what? Tennessee probably wasn't the best team they've ever had up there last year. And they didn't beat anybody good. But guess what? They won 8 games because they could score enough points to beat the teams they should beat. Oh, go figure. Alabama, offensive team last year when they were good, they were scoring. Ty Simpson up and down the field, Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Grubb. Excellent. Excellent. You know, Mississippi State didn't win. They had to bowl at 5-7, finished 5-8. They didn't win, but they scored. They put points on the board. They were better because they could put points on the board. You know, Texas with Sarkisian, once they learned how to block, they started putting points up. You know, A&M, Colin Klein. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. Guess who didn't score? Brian Kelly, whose offense under Joe Sloan, kind of similar to what they ran at Auburn, and they couldn't block either. You know, the crazy thing is Auburn and Florida were on paper going in, two of the better offensive lines. Guess who did score? Mike Bobo. Guess what? Mike Bobo is an excellent offensive coordinator, despite Georgia fans and most of South Carolina and Auburn fans thinking he's bad. You know, yeah, and so you can kind of tell that this is a must in the Southeastern Conference these days. You know, and it's going to be not going to be anything totally different. I mean, Kendall Briles, obviously being the son of Art and kind of the god, the Corleone family of all this stuff, but Tennessee runs similar stuff with some tweaks. Auburn under Alex Golish will run it. John David Baker out at Ole Miss. I mean, there's a lot from that tree. Charlie Weiss Jr. now at LSU, and Lane Kiffin. So there's a lot that, I mean, I'm kind of, because Florida's on the schedule, I'm kind of happy Florida went with the Buster Faulkner thing. That's hard to stop too, but for different reasons. But kind of glad of that because I've always had this when I talked about Chip Kelly earlier, when Chip Kelly was up for the Florida job and gosh, when they hired Dan Mullen. That worried me because at the time I didn't know that Chip Kelly would be NFL-ish and all that. Because it's like, well, you match him with what they can get speed-wise every year at Florida. That's dangerous. That's a fit. But they didn't. They hired Mullen, and Mullen's a great offensive coordinator too. I mean, he worked. It wasn't they fired him because of recruiting rankings for some reason. But yeah, so you look around the SEC. There's very few teams winning that don't have good, you know, good schemes or proven schemes, proven play callers. Even then, even some fail. I mean, some proven guys, you're like, how did this not work? Well, it just didn't work. Yeah, I think Hugh Freeze is an example of that. So you need that. You need to do something. And Kendall Briles, I think, brings that to the table. And based on everything I've heard, like the reasons why they weren't good last year, from a plan standpoint. You hear it publicly, you hear it privately. That's flipped on its head, and that's good. That's a good move by Shane Beamer, regardless of the outcomes. So, yeah. So, Kendall Bryce working well. It's a welcomed development. It's a breath of fresh air. Good to hear from him at the press conference yesterday to kind of reinforce some of those things out there. Gamecocks get back on the practice field Wednesday. You know, I'm starting to get some expectations for this offense this year. It's going to be crazy because I'd be kind of stunned if the offense wasn't something that you all like, right? And that is exciting, aggressive, creative, and fun. But I don't think the offseason expectations for the offense are going to be anywhere near what they were last year. So go figure. All right, catch you on the show. It's Terrible Tuesday. I'm sure we'll talk a number of topics. Probably going to get back into some football stuff. Also talk a little bit about the other sports and what's going to happen. What's going to happen with basketball? What's that roster? Haven't seen any moves so far on that publicly. I believe it will be any day now. And then, you know, if everybody wants to talk about baseball and what needs to happen, that's fine. Don't forget women's basketball this weekend, 1 p.m. on ABC against the Southern University and Samford winner. Gamecocks will start, and then they get Clemson or Southern Cal after that. So that's it's going to be good. You know, good weekend if you're a fan of the Gamecock women's basketball team. All right, this has been Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. See you on the show. Holla.